All right. So this is yet another episode of Dots of Thoughts Nkata Podcast. I am here with my very good friend, Yukim.
Hi, Yukim. Nice to meet you.
Yes, Yukim is a filmmaker, also a model. Is that okay to say you're a model as well?
Well, that's good.
Yep. Yeah, a model, a filmmaker, and...
And a writer.
And a writer. So the other day we saw this film at the cinema. This film called Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And it was actually her who, you know, suggested the film to me. And I saw it and I was like, wow, this looks really amazing. And so we went out to see it in the cinema here in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And we found it very, very, I would say, intriguing in many ways. And I came out of the film feeling like it's one of those films that are very indicative or like a marker of the times we live in. And given that we are in the beginning of the third decade of the century, I think this is one film that will be a reference for how this decade is going to be seen and critiqued in many ways. Yeah. So we thought to have a conversation about the film.
Yeah.
And, you know, flesh out some of the thoughts inspired by the film. We had this very lengthy conversation after the film, but we thought, okay, let's do this in the context of a podcast. So yeah, that's it.
What do you think is so special about this film though? Because I mean, this is fun, definitely, and there are a lot of things are going on. But at the same time, like, why would you think this is such a special film that it's going to be the mark of the decades of the century?
The premise of the film is basically that there's this whole notion of the multi-universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is central to the film. But the approach to the whole idea of the multi-universe is it's not like to create this fictitious lives, mm-hmm. in a way. Mm-hmm. That is about having these better versions of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a fairy tale kind of living your reality and going to...
Yeah, and it's different than other general idea of time travel or, you know, like Doctor Strange or...
Exactly.
Anything like very some typical American time travel film. The idea they're carrying is really not the same as what this multi-universe is about.
Yeah. So every time you think of a version of yourself or what it could be, it becomes another universe. So this is actually the premise of the film. It plays with the idea of the I am and the who you are and who you are supposed to be. It's almost like this whole conversation about identity crisis. But this time around, there is the added context of embracing all these multiple parts of you within the context of subjectivity. Subjectivity as agency as well. It's basically critiquing subjectivity. So when we say truth has become plural.
Mm-hmm.
Or what if your own version of truth is so like truncated and fragmented into multi-universes and versions of yourself? How do you reconcile all those versions of yourself into one person or not? And this for me is what the film is about.
Mm-hmm. The whole narrative is deconstructing itself while delivering the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it is anti-film. That's how I found it interesting.
And do you think it succeeds in being an anti-film?
I think the film had so much fun doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it has this very clear narrative and message, when we think of a film, normally would have linear timeline, linear story. This is the kind of illusion that audience just put themselves into. At some point, I also felt this really has too many fragments, like too many different setup, too many different multiverse universes. Everything was like out of your hand, just getting very fragmented at some point, to the point where the narrative doesn't matter, or to the point where every single universe isn't really meaningful or isn't really adding into any to the dominant, the center narrative. That's why I thought this is the narrative that is deconstructing itself while carrying the narrative. So in that sense, this is very anti-film, and I think this film implies this idea of anti-film in a very comedy way.
Very, very interesting. I didn't think of it that way, but now you're saying it, I see how film performs itself in that way. It was dealing with the material of a universe.
Yeah.
Universe that is, for many of us,
mm-hmm.
an imagination. For the scientist, is a conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
For the everyday person, is basically a portal to escape to, you know, through imagination. So it's not a real thing in that sense. In other words, it's not something anyone can control.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to give a sense of that, so like it growing beyond the audience.
Yeah, because the visuals are very interesting, very fun, and very strong. Every single universe has a very crazy setup, just like the sausage hand.
Yeah.
And
I mean, also like the way they use the notion of kung fu as, at some point, performance, at some point, dance, as a point towards the end of the film.
Yeah. So there was dance, kung fu, and some love, family. There was all sort of, how to say, like, cliche, I would say. I
mean,
every single universe carries some idea of cliche,
mm-hmm.
but not in a way that being really cliche, but it really plays with the idea of cliche.
Yeah. On what is beautiful, but also brave of them, is mm-hmm. that they were working with the everyday mundane things
mm-hmm.
while trying to ascribe it this value, this of a thoughtful artistic material,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the same time, while keeping it playful, while keeping it natural and effortless,
mm-hmm.
you know, in many ways, you see something that came out of the mind of these two writers and two directors, but they made it look like it's a play. It's a play, but there's a lot of thinking behind making it feel that way.
There are multiple layers in the film itself. I mean, apart from the idea of multi-universe.
Let's maybe try and see some scenes.
Yeah.
And see what is going to evoke for us, right?
Come on.
You may be in grave danger. There's no time to explain. Hold this.
Why are you doing this?
Pay attention. When we leave this elevator, you can either turn left towards your scheduled audit appointment, or you can turn right and go into the janitor's closet.
Sun Jingbing, why would I go into the janitor's
closet? Not now.
Ayo, why you download all these apps on my phone?
Breathe in. You can feel a slight pressure in your head.
You turned the phone on.
So this is the point where she enters the first universe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so at this point now, I want to ask you, you know, because the casts
mm-hmm.
are all like of Asian background. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this plays out in the US. So there's a bit of that diaspora reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you understand in the context of the casting and the fact that it is somewhat depict the Asian reality to use as a
tool,
as an element for this story.
I think, I mean, I can't speak for anyone, especially they are the family, like Chinese immigrant family.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm Asian.
Uh-huh.
I really cannot understand how they are like. American Asians are very different. They are also very different from, they probably feel different being different from white American. They will still have the sense of being immigrant and all that. But at the same time, if they're in Korea, they still are feeling kind of strangers.
Uh-huh.
So they're like really in between beings. And I cannot understand that. But then I think this overall film kind of, the reconciling of what the director has gone through to his life. I cannot speak for him, but he is probably second generation Asian American.
Yeah. You mean one of the directors?
Yeah.
Because the other, I think, is German.
His surname sounds very German.
Yeah.
So the Kwan.
Mm-hmm.
So he grew up in probably Chinese household,
mm-hmm.
studying in American white society,
mm-hmm.
growing up there, speaking English outside, but speaking Chinese or other language something I cannot understand, and also I cannot imagine what it is to be like, because you are basically living two different cultures simultaneously. So when you're home, you are speaking, just like this film, you're speaking Chinese and really carrying the Chinese culture, like food and then the respect to their elderly and all that. And then when, as soon as you walk out of the house, it's just something else, like as if it shows the tax authority. It is a kind of metaphor, I think,
mm-hmm.
that shows how harsh the reality could be, like when outside your collective belief or collective idea. It's almost like the family value against the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
kind of
yeah.
very against situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel. And then the Jamie Curtis,
mm-hmm.
the lady is being very scary, and then it's really the metaphor of how things have been harsh for
you mean the
immigrant?
Yeah, the lady who played the
tax.
Look at the IRS lady. A lady who was from the IRS, from the tax people.
Finanzamt.
Yeah, the Finanzamt, for the American Finanzamt.
Yeah. Finanzamt is really like one of the symbol of aura for foreigners.
Yeah.
Don't you think? It's like.
Tell me about it. I was dealing with them last week. You know, it is really.
Deal with it like tomorrow or something. Like, and it really comes as a huge fear
mm-hmm.
that individually has to go through, because no one's going to help you when it comes to taxes
yeah.
in foreign countries, especially.
Mm.
Yeah. So I have the fear. And then probably, I don't know, maybe every immigrant knows what that is
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
about tax authority, how fearful they represent.
And so it's so interesting that they use that as the entry point,
yeah.
as the element of agitation
in
symbol. The film.
A symbol of the rest of the world that no one is protecting you.
Yes, no one is protecting you.
Imagining of the life that Daniel Kwan has gone through.
Mm-hmm.
I really cannot speak for him, but mm-hmm. so basically this simultaneous realities that he has been living,
like mm-hmm.
Chinese and American, and it's just like one door away.
Mm-hmm.
You have to switch every now and then. And like this girl, the daughter has
yeah.
a partner, like white partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's the one that who's trying to blur the boundary between her origin and America,
mm-hmm.
where she her race now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So let's jump into another part of the film and see what happens.
Understand?
No.
But that was funny because I saw The Other Universe and it was beautiful without you. So I should have listened to my dad. Because she saw the where she was and the film award
mm-hmm.
and the dress.
Okay, so she was in the film award and the dress, but he wasn't there.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't in the picture.
Yeah. So she was, that was beautiful without you.
Yeah, and I should have listened to my dad.
Yeah.
that is the reality. So at that point also, what's interesting is that she was fighting the tax office lady.
Yeah.
So like beating her up in that sense. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is part of the metaphor mm-hmm. that we glean from the film. But then behind her is the husband.
Right.
That, you know, in this life, she more or less thinks is useless.
Right.
Please.
But then what do you make of the fact that the person who comes from this other universe to sort of like help her also speaks to the husband? Is there sort of like a double consciousness there?
Double consciousness.
Yeah, or is it like this space where the same thing that has always been your source of, say, disappointment could also be what brings you a kind of relief or possibilities? Yeah.
Yeah, this film on a structural level or on a narrative level or any sentimental level, I keep seeing this motive of two polars that are eventually being connected. And the whole story kind of goes like that. And every now and then you see the idea, someone saying everything is nothing or something like that.
Yeah.
So what I just said early is basically showing too many universes and oversaturated images, like image saturated, everything's super saturated. And to the end, eventually in the end, it says, because nothing matter. That's how I see it, actually. Like having too many things makes you feel that nothing actually matters. It's like, so everything is nothing in the end. So it's like, it's starting from the everything idea and then to the other end, which is nothing. And they kind of connected. They connected, or maybe they reconciled. That's how I see. And also there are some times the daughter turned into this omnipotent being. And she would say, everything's nothing. Or she would say, nothing matters. Because she's the one that has every possible power, and she's the one that can be in every existing universe. So she's the only being that can exist everywhere.
Yeah.
And she, what she would say is, I just want everything goes nothing, because nothing matter. So this is like really strong.
And you think that the metaphor there is the fact that she eventually is her daughter, actually, and she's a younger generation and she exists across the universe. And you think that's like a metaphor for...
for
internet, social media, or what?
No, not necessarily, but I mean, from even this scene where the father was pretty useless most of the time, but then when every now and then he would be someone really clever and really useful. And also there were some scenes that was saying that how the mom has been failure in so many attempts. That's one of the things that the father would say to her, because you were failing so many things in many other universes. So that's why you can start all over again. Or
It's interesting. Now
that really makes it into comedy, which is great. So I keep seeing this two extreme poles end up meeting each other, making in some kind of synergy or reconciling in some way. It's more like connecting those dots, like in a smaller and bigger level.
As you speak now, as you try to create the image of those connections, I see that what for me makes this film very powerful is the fact that something that I've always said, that we begin to see in a few artistic works, those works that tend to want to take care of or tend to the connecting threads of things, to tend to the process of how things connect rather than dichotomies, rather than focusing on a thing and its opposite, on the binaries. They're much more interested in how things reconcile themselves. So I feel like this film carries that. This is basically what you're saying, that it begins from this place of things are disparate. And then, but then it begins to take you through the process of them reconciling. And sometimes they become a doppelganger, like, you know, double image. Like the father, right? Becomes this thing that you, an enigma. Okay, we call it an enigma because we don't, that's what we say to something that is, that is double. Because of the way we have been socialized to think that things must have to be singular. So we call him an enigma, but it's more like a multicultural, diverse, in all the words that we give, that's basically a paradox. Again, that's the thing. The notion of a paradox comes in so much in this film. And I feel like the idea of a paradox is very much the reality of the migrant or the sojourner or the person or the foreigner. Is this paradox constantly.
So, I mean, paradox, I wish there was a better word than paradox to describe this. this motive. Because paradox doesn't reconcile in the end. You know, like, just like when you are living a life, a lot of things you realize that you really have to go around, detour all the way,
mm-hmm.
just to come to the same beginning.
Mm-hmm. The road it passes through is one of paradox, irony, contradictions, many, many things. Again, when we say the paradox does not reconcile, it's also the way we have treated paradox. The whole notion of paradox is that it's irreconcilable. It cannot reconcile.
Right.
Imagine that we begin to entertain this kind of way of something becoming, taking on this paradoxical nature.
Mm-hmm.
But then it begins to reconcile itself, not into a conflict, but a flow.
Yeah, right. That's the difference. That's what we were also earlier talking about. Then what I see from this film is two different ideologies, maybe two different ideologies about time. This idea of time that goes linear and chronological is very Western idea.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist everywhere. I mean,
mm-hmm.
every different culture, civilization, has different notion of time, and they're not always going on chronological sense.
Yeah.
This film keeps tackling the idea of chronology, which is very Western, linear, centered art idea. But then in the end of the day, they reconcile somehow.
Yeah.
I want to talk about them.
Yeah, but do you now see that reconciliation as a sort of like a sucking back into that Western chronology, or is it?
Yeah, that's the limit of this film, because it is still American film. That's what you can tell.
Yeah.
That's a metaphor. I mean, even if it has the elements of Chinese immigrant or different culture than American culture, still it reconciles, as in it gets sucked into very Americanness. And the trait of Americanness, I would say, is homogenization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's different from Asia or Europe, because in Europe or Asia, they still individually exist exist as a spectrum of different cultures, mm-hmm. like France, England, they're all different, although mm-hmm. they're in the same continent.
Yeah.
In America, there is very interesting idea of homogenization.
Mm-hmm. I was seeing that towards the end of the film,
mm-hmm.
you know, where the dance was happening, where the fight that was also dance was happening. And that was the point where the film wanted to sort of like reconcile things and bring everything together into something coherent, almost like it started taking on that form of living happily ever after. Mm. You know? That is always the point of every story.
Mm.
And I remember watching the film when we were in the cinema. Mm-hmm. Towards that point, I started to feel a little bit, okay, I've seen everything I wanted to see.
Yeah.
At that point now, I got it. I got it immediately that they were trying to like bring it into one content.
Because mm-hmm. there was the point that, you know, they're really trying to pull everything back in and to make an end.
Yeah.
And that the key was the family love.
Yes.
Asian family love.
Yeah.
So like all this problem were happening in the reality, were taking places in reality, for instance, Western context.
Mm-hmm.
And what is going to hold everything back together and making it right is the very Asian idea of family love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is good. That is kind of unreconciling that we just talked about. But then I would still say that is still the limit of this film being a very American film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think that they succeeded in giving the film that substance of a much more noble and sublime kind of love that... Or that is an Asian family love.
Sublime is a very interesting word, because sublime as in we cannot understand. So mm-hmm. it's just there somehow, mm-hmm. but there's not, we cannot reach how the logic behind is.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, it doesn't solve any problem.
Yeah.
It is still a kind of authority, like, okay, this is what is called love and this is what we got to believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's also how I felt in some way. why they had to bring this Asian element, because this idea of generation gap is the key.
Mm-hmm.
That it's the problem that begins the film, and also this is the solution that solves everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like Asian-specific generational gap, I mean, this modern and contemporary, between the modern and contemporary generation, that is the main element of this film.
Mm-hmm. You know, but looking at it as a black person, you know, who is also conversant with Europe and all the struggles that Africans in diaspora go through in having African Americans, I would say that what I see is basically singling out the Asian reality and to use it as a to represent or to tackle this larger problem. Because you know, when you see, you know, the struggles that the main character went through with the daughter, who is of a different generation, but also who is empowered differently, you know, because this is the whole notion of her being able to cross all the universe at once. She's one person who was able to exist in all the universe at you know, and be able to move through them.
Mm-hmm.
It's an indication that the younger ones are empowered differently.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I always talk about this whole notion of the paradox again, where you have the younger ones and they feel like their way of being in the world, they feel like they're always limited by the way the world is constructed before them. Their parents and the ones that came before them don't understand the ephemerality of their lives and the sublimity of it, the transience of it. And this whole idea of moving through the universe is an indication of that. But again, in doing that, she became this black sheep, you know, in a sense, you know. She became this destructive. Because she wanted to end everything in the just wanted to end everything and to start all over again. And so, on one hand, there's pointing to this disposition of the younger generation to say, I just want to implode everything simply because I feel it is not right. And because we understand better, you know, because we see you can do
better.
That's
like one way of seeing generational gap. But what I want to focus here when it comes to generation gap of this film, because I really see the very strong sentiment of this current generation, current young generation, the daughter representing here. For instance, when we talk about generation gap, we always say that the parent generation, their knowledge is limited because they're older, and then young generation, they just want to be free and they don't understand older generation. They just want to run fast when older generation is staggering behind. But then other perspective that I want to suggest is the older generation has to know that this younger generation is really born in, how to say, like out of ash. Because older generation, they still have a lot to believe. They were so safe. I mean, they were not safe from poverty and war and all that. But at the same time, they were really safe from ideologies and ideas. Yeah. And then when you say love, when you say family, or when you say society and future life, all these heavy questions, you don't have to question because there are always some idea which is going to hold you. So you're not lost. You're not abandoned by those ideas. Before my generation, like up to my parents' generation, they still had very kind of religious abstract ideologies that can always hold them. So they don't ever have to question about their existence. They don't have to go through existential crisis.
Yeah.
Because there is a name for everything. And there is a way, the specific way that for everyone.
Yeah.
Although they might not be as free as we are, but then...
Okay, so now the younger generation, they don't have that.
The younger generation, like 90s and 2000, everything's gone rapidly. Neoliberalized, as in every single person loses the condition of collective value.
Yeah.
Like religion, family. We don't know what that means. We don't know what this idea of sense of community. I mean, I grew up without knowing that. I don't know what that means. Also, being neoliberalized means we all are born to compete.
Uh-huh.
And we are all born to fulfill our exchange value. Everything can be exchanged with money.
Uh-huh.
That kind of generation, that is what we're born from. Uh-huh. So when older generations say that, oh, you have to do this and that, family is important and all that, and then like, no, that's all ghost. It don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
It's all religion that has died a long time ago.
And yeah.
I know that's really important for everyone, for you, but then we just never had it.
Uh-huh.
And you should understand how suicidal it is to live a world where there is nothing to believe.
Uh-huh.
So when there is no belief that were given to me, to my life, my generation, I have to consider everything, every single thing. I have to define everything by myself, even myself, and how I'm going to perceive the idea of future or love, family, and all these abstract questions. So then what I see from this idea of that generation gap is older generation really don't know that we are really living in nothing, no safety net. You still need some kind of religion. Like everybody needs some kind of religion. And just for instance, when a person die, we feel much more sad than when we see some insect die on the street.
Yeah.
It means there is some other value that we have.
Yeah.
Like when we see some animal dies and when we see a person die, this is carries a very different weight. And that's a kind of religion also when we're, if you die tomorrow, then I'll be like sad and I'm going to think, I wish you go to a good place.
Uh-huh.
But actually, there is no such a thing like good place. But I will still have, I'll still keep the kind of religious idea that I hope you go to the better place.
Uh-huh.
They're like the protection, safety net for every individual to live a life instead of dying.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is a very existential idea, but then, I mean, can we really say that living is better than dying? No, we can't. We don't know. We really cannot prove
uh-huh.
why this is better than dying. How am I saying this?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting.
So this whole sentiments are very existential and suicidal because there's nothing to believe, that because there's nothing to save me from this world.
So you think this is sort of like the crisis of the younger generation?
It's like really in a crisis. And because, you know, I just want everything to end.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing matters. She's constantly saying that. She constantly carried the sentiments of this generation.
Mm-hmm.
But then parents really don't understand and they just think this young generation are being such a brat.
Yeah.
So like what I see is it's not us not understanding them, but it's them not understanding us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about that for some reason. I don't know.
I mean, it goes both ways, right? It's like, okay. And we see that actually play out in the film
mm-hmm.
where on one hand, when the camera turns to the daughter,
mm-hmm.
we see that sentiment of, you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have our own reality, our own stuff to deal with here.
Mm-hmm.
But you are busy doing your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mom looks at her and is like, what's your problem? Like, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Look at me, I've been doing all these things for all of you. And you tell me still that I don't understand. So it played out a bit here. But eventually, towards the end of the film, the mother also went through a sort of like transformation.
Yeah.
Yeah, where she got to a point where she said, look, there has to be a way that I can use this, my adult energy,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to using it for destruction. Destruction. And again, here I'm basically referencing First World War, Second World War, because this is really these are some of the events that actually changed
mm-hmm.
the way the world is configured and even beliefs. And you know, it's been really about violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that also when she wanted to solve the problem with violence.
Mm-hmm.
But then she had a turnaround and it becomes a dance.
Mm-hmm.
But also her own transformation started in that sense. But it was also Hannah going towards the daughter and saying, look, I'll be here for you. So just, you know, do you. So again, there is that, you know, letting the daughter to get to that point of implosion mm-hmm. and wait for her there. You know, wait for her at that point where she's almost gone. Mm-hmm. And then she now had to put her strength there to draw her back.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's actually this notion of the sublime love of the that doesn't question anything, that doesn't even say this is now what is most important than this, is simply that this love is, you know, this love is. And we don't know what it is. We don't even have to give it a name anymore. At that point, towards the end of the film, you get a sense that everyone has come to a place where they are equipped or with all these experiences to make really clear decisions about what they want to do. So what is now left in all of this nothingness is simply your ability to decide.
Right.
I find that very interesting that when everything falls apart, when everything becomes nothing and everything elsewhere, you know, you are left with your agency. You are left with your subjectivity. What are you going to do with it? Even with your own daughter, you cannot say anymore, it is because she came out of my womb. That's why I'm loving her. You have to say, I love you because I decide to.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Oh, that's very poetic, beautiful.
Yeah.
And tragic at the same time.
And tragic at the same time. It makes me think of how, you know, like this whole notion of the self, where we put ourselves through all these experiences. For instance, she passed through all these places. You know, like in the beginning of the film, we were still trying to get her to enter the experience of going through the to become conscious in these other universes, because she was not conscious of it. She was only stuck in her own, in that reality.
Mm-hmm.
But this other person, you know, using the husband as a portal to speak to her, was getting her to become conscious of these other universes and other versions of herself. And by the time she was able to make that journey, I have a feeling that also is a metaphor for passing yourself through your own personal process. And that process forges you, you know, as opposed to takes away from you. It forges you. Because if we can look at this universe as a version of herself, it means somehow that universe is contained in her already. So it has to just manifest at some point. And so it will not kill you, but make you, will manifest you, give you, empower you in a way.
Right.
And as she went through that process, she came out, you know, saying, well, anyway, you know, it's like I've been through all of this, you know, it looks like it's all the same and everything is just the same. So we might as well just do whatever we want.
Yeah.
But in that doing whatever we want, are we going to lose ourselves? I think that at the end of the day, there's so much value ascribed to the ability to consciously make a decision.
This is the other reconciliation that we were
talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a good way? Or?
It makes it look good in the film, but is it good? No, but then it's not good or bad. That's the thing. It's just what it is. Sometimes you have to go all around the tour only to come back to where you has started. And on that path, there is no good or bad. This whole world and contemporary society is believing in the idea of efficiency, which is not the universal truth, but still just a aspect of seeing things, which is heavily tied to industrialization, which is not so long ago, if you think of human history. It's definitely really not sustainable.
Yeah.
And then also this idea of efficiency is dying or has died already, but then we're still believing the ghost that has died a long time ago.
Yeah.
Because what does that efficiency mean? This is so simple. Like, how quickly creating more profit with less effort, less time, less labor. But then profit and the time is put into and the effort, are there only three axes when we are making decisions? Do we only need these three axes to make decisions? No, we have many more than this. But then somehow this idea of efficiency, which only has these three, not even three, like time and labor, maybe this is like we can count them with one. So like profit and effort, profit and labor, only has like very simple two axes become the basis that we can make a decision for every daily base and political base.
And so now, what is on the other side of things for you?
I mean, for instance, it doesn't count. It doesn't consider anything about sustainability. I mean, not only about like nature, environmental sustainability, but then this idea of efficiency is very short-sighted. Like, it's basically like how fast we can get the profit, more profit. Mm-hmm. There is also many different types of wealth. But then in this idea of efficiency, the wealth, it means commodity level wealth corporate level wealth, like monetization. Mm-hmm. This idea of efficiency is really not considering social wealth, for instance, nature wealth. What actually make profit is social wealth and nature wealth that we don't count it as money.
Mm-hmm.
When we are ignoring this huge factor that makes actual profit, which is social wealth and nature, mm-hmm. nature resource, then are we still going to say this is efficient?
Yeah, we've seen the repercussions of constant extraction without putting back.
Mm-hmm.
Nature doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
Nature is a symbiosis. Mm-hmm. When it takes out, it puts back. Central to nature is the whole idea of nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take and leave
mm-hmm.
and leave a gap. And yet what we call efficiency today is exactly that. We take, and we don't care about its sustainability, how it replenishes itself.
Mm.
If it wasn't for this whole crazy concept of industrialization, I think technology would have taken a different turn. I think we would have still invented planes, maybe. But then as human beings, we would have invented planes that with zero carbon emissions. It's possible to do that. It's just that it is not profitable now to do that, but it is possible to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we started out from a place where efficiency meant take more profit,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily create something that is healthy
mm-hmm.
for the environment and the human beings. You know, as long as one person or a group of person or a group of country or a particular country mm-hmm. could have that wealth at the expense of others,
mm-hmm.
is efficient. But then imagine that we were thinking of a world where first and foremost was, how healthy is this for us,
mm-hmm.
for our planet? And our ancestors, I'm not sure that our ancestors didn't know this, mm-hmm. even with the less technology they had. I can imagine that they knew already, you know, what was harmful to the earth
mm-hmm.
and what was not. But somehow we derailed, you know, with industrialization and all of that, we derailed from there and we built this whole notion of efficiency
mm-hmm.
as with everything that we are looking at and rethinking and reimagining. We have to also critique that word efficiency.
We have to redefine the idea of efficiency because, you know, public and human mind is very simple and lazy. So when the simpler it gets, the more loved the idea is.
Yeah.
And when you put things into binary, then it's much easier to make people to choose this or that when actually they are thousands of other options.
Yes, yes.
Just like this efficiency just made everything so clear and so easy to be very intuitively, you can think for everybody. Mm-hmm. But actually, the world is not like that. And mm-hmm. it's got to have many more accesses than time and labor and, you know, money, wealth. And also, this is very short-cycled. The idea of making profitability is very short-cycled. We can see this idea of efficiency in the very long term, instead of if it's making a profit by Q4.
And also for us to be able to imagine that kind of world,
mm-hmm.
we must see ourselves beyond our own lifespan.
Yeah.
Mm. You know,
at least we got to see to our lifespan.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And beyond, because and accept that much of our actions in the world,
mm-hmm.
it's not about
mm-hmm.
our own existence only.
Mm-hmm.
I've been toying with this idea of, why does everyone need to take care of themselves and their own existence and the existence of their family,
mm-hmm.
when if every of us
mm-hmm.
have this one idea that we take care of each other,
mm-hmm.
then it wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I was discussing with a friend and I say, let us play with this idea. You have a child.
Mm-hmm.
Already in Africa, you say it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
And then the friend says to me, well, what if the parents die? I say, and so what? In fact, if we have the kind of world we're talking about, and we even call it an efficient world, we already have a scenario where when the parent of a child dies,
mm-hmm.
other parents lines up,
mm-hmm.
and the child will have to choose
mm-hmm.
the parent. The child, children don't care about their parents, really.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
We're talking about yourself.
No, they don't care about their parents from the beginning. They don't care who is their parent.
Mm-hmm.
It is us who teach them that this is your father, this is your mama, this is your papa.
Mm-hmm.
This is people who are responsible for you. Mm-hmm. Think about it. When a child is born, they don't necessarily think of you as this exceptional, absolute person.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can be there for the child.
Yeah.
And where I come from, my grandmother was there when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
My aunties were there. My uncles were there. When I was growing up, I didn't see my father and my mother. They were like authorities.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't the only person from whom I could learn.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that we create a society where when a parent dies, okay, but then there's other parents there immediately to take up the child.
Mm-hmm.
And the child will be the one to choose, because we have created a world that says that the child is the future.
Mm-hmm.
The child is the evolution of the human species. The world, first of all, should be created to be conducive for children.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also a kind of social wealth.
Yeah, exactly.
But then capitalism really led us blind of the social wealth, where that is actually most of everything, everywhere.
That's it. I think this is a good note to end, you know, this conversation, especially in relation to the film, in a way you said, when you simplify things and make it a binary, people love it. But when you make it all messy and scattered, and make it multi-universal.
This film. That was lovely. Like, made it into someone not simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it ended a very simple love story, but anyway.
Yeah. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And yes, this is Nkata Podcast, Dots of Thoughts. Yeah. So what we have done is to take one dot of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And we expanded on it.
Mm.
Yeah. That's what we did. All right. See you in the next one. Bye-bye.